Everybody open your Bibles, Proverbs 1. We've been discussing wisdom literature. And we've talked about what wisdom really is. And in this context, wisdom is understanding reasonable principles for life under the sun. How to advantageously use the time that we have here on earth. Now, don't misunderstand. If a person doesn't go to heaven, everything's been unwise. No question about that. But the wisdom literature is really not pointing at how to go to heaven. It's giving advice and counsel and guidance for good use of life here. Now, who would most need that? Now, all of us need it. We know that. But what group automatically comes to mind? The young, the immature, those who have not had the experience of that age brings to see the foolish things that they themselves have done, or to observe their peers. So the book of Proverbs repeatedly makes reference to my son. Remember, we looked at the first four verses that talked about, or the first, actually, five verses that talk about the purposes for the Proverbs. To know wisdom, to discern words of understanding, to receive instruction so that you're guided in justice and righteousness and equity, to give prudence, and prudence, remember, is the ability to do the best under the circumstances. What's the prudent thing to do? Whatever is best at that time. To give prudence to the simple. And again, simple is not talking about a person who doesn't have good mental ability. It's talking about one who is naive, who has not had the experience. To give give prudence to the simple. To the young man, giving knowledge and discretion. To the wise man, to the one who's already had some experience, that he may hear an increase in his learning, and that the man of understanding may attain unto sound counsel. Those are the purposes for the wisdom literature. And then in verse 6 he says, to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. But remember, we've talked about the fact that wisdom is not hidden. It's shouting from every street corner, giving us guidance. And then in the next two verses, 7 and 8, the writer gives some generalizations that are going to be repeated throughout the book. Number one, the fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom. And fear is not cowardice, but respect, knowing that God is, and that God gives everything that we have. And so a proper respect for God. And then secondly, he tells them, listen to the instruction of your father and forsake not the law of your mother. Listen to your parents. Those two sources. What a respect for God, a respect for your parents, is really the beginning for a good life. Now, starting in the next verse, the writer is going to give a quick guidance for the immature, for the unskilled. And this is going to happen several times in the book. That he's in the first nine chapters. In the first nine chapters, he's really giving an overview that wisdom is superior to foolishness. It's better to walk wisely than to make the mistakes that commonly are made. And then he sprinkles in these 9 chapters some examples or illustrations, applications of that principle. The first one is starting here in verse 9. When he says, or in verse 10, pardon me, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause, let us swallow them up alive as Sheol, and whole as those that go down in the pit, we shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Thou shalt cast thy lot among us, and we will all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is the net spread in the sight of any bird. And these lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privately for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain. It taketh away the life of the owners thereof." Now, what's he warning about? The last verse makes the application. Absolutely. The generalization is, be careful if you're greedy for gain. Now, honest labor, proper reward is God-given, intended. That's part of life. But greed is a bad master. I don't know if any of you do it or not. If there's not a ball game on, I sometimes listen to the news, but it's so depressing that I don't spend a lot of time there. And I have found myself watching a lot of times in the History Channel and some of the others like that about gangsters in the U.S., about the problems with gangs and things of that. Do any of you do that? Am I the only one? No, I see Charlie does. I've been impressed. I've watched on several occasions a documentary of drug dealers. They've got their faces covered, their voices muffled, and they tell what they do. And on more than one occasion, drug dealers have talked about the fact that now they use violence. Saw one just this past week of a guy who planned his way of making money was he found a drug dealer, a street dealer. I'm not talking about one of the big bosses. He found a street dealer. And then he would go to the area where that guy hung around, he would find a nice building that had a door open to it. And it would be like a building that had offices or apartments. He would make contact with the drug dealer to come to that address. Now, the guy didn't live there, but he's just using that address. To come to that address that he wanted to buy some drugs. When the guy showed up with the drugs, he pulled a gun on him, pushed him inside the door, beat him up, took his drug money, and he's out the door. He made his living by taking the money from the dealer. That was just one case. And on several occasions, these guys, as they've talked about their lifestyle, make a reference to, "I'll probably get killed. That's the way my life will end." Listen to what the Lord said. He's citing a case. "My son, if sinners entice you, if they say to you, 'Come on, join our gang, be one of us, we're all going to have one purse, where are we going to get the money?' We will lie in wait for people who are unsuspecting. And we'll seize them and we'll take their goods. And then we'll all share it and share alike. And you can have it easy with us. You can make it with us." And then the writer inserts a proverb in this accounting. Here's the proverb, verse 17. "In vain is the net spread in the sight of any bird." Okay. In this time, they would trap birds for food. And one of the ways they trapped them was in the woods or in an area where houses are, between the houses, they would spread a net. And when the bird came along and got caught in that net, then they could do it. And the point was, hey, it would be vain, meaningless, unproductive if the bird saw the net. So you have to spread the net where the bird's not seeing. What's he telling this young man? These guys are spreading a net in front of you that you don't understand. And if you don't see it, then tragedy is going to come to you. What's going to happen? He makes the application. They that shed blood, guess what's going to happen to them? Their own blood will be shed. So he says, they lay in wait for their own blood. They don't realize it. But this gang typler, I've watched the documentaries of the big gangs of earlier days when the mafia was so powerful but supposedly secret. And pictures, one after another, of the gangsters lying in the street in their own blood. The application the Lord is making is, son, when they come along and offer you easy money, don't buy into it. What they don't realize is they're going to shed their own blood. Violence brings violence. Do you think young people need that kind of warning? What do you think? Do you think our society could use a healthy dose of "don't live for greed" and and don't do the illicit things. All right. Now, sprinkle through the 9 chapters are a number of references and warnings about the young person going to the strange woman. What do you think a strange woman would be? Does that mean somebody 8 feet tall and big red hair and all that? What? Immoral, right? Strange is in the sense of what? Unauthorized. Good, Willie. She's not your woman. My wife is my woman. Other women are strange women. They don't belong to me. What group of women would be available to everybody? What? Prostitutes, the harlots. Share with me some passages. Everybody turn to chapter 2. We're not going to read all of this section, but in chapter 2, he's giving a generalization again about what wisdom will do for you. In verse 12, it's going to deliver you from some things. It'll deliver you from the way of evil, from men that speak perverse things, who forsake the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness. Well, that passage we've already covered would be that type of thing. Verse 14. Who rejoice to do evil and delight in the perverseness of evil. Who are crooked in their ways and wayward in their paths. Wisdom will keep you from this. In verse 16. To deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the foreigner, that flattereth with her words, that forsaketh the friend of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go unto her shall return again, neither do they attain unto the paths of life. So he says, I'm giving you this advice to keep you away from evil men, to keep you away from the perverse line. I'm giving you this advice to keep you away from the strange woman that would lead you into tragedy. Drop down now to chapter 5. Chapter 5. A long reading, but it's on the same point. Verses 1 through 20. My son, attend unto my wisdom. Incline thine ear unto my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's as bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold of Sheol, so that she findeth not the level path of life. Her ways are unstable, and she knoweth it not. You ever seen some of the documentaries on women who are prostitutes? I guess I've got a sordid mind, but I look at some of those things. And you see them in the prime of their youth, and then a little bit later, like worn-out rags to be tossed aside. Verse 7, "Now therefore, my son, hearken unto me, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her." Stay away from her. "Come not near the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy strength, and thy labors be in the house of an alien. And thou mourn at thy later end, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. I say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof? Neither have I obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was well nigh in all evil in the midst of the assembly and the congregation." Here's a warning against going to the strange woman, that it eventually destroys him and even his health. I don't know whether that's an allusion to all the problems and complications that can come from illicit sex or what. But God is saying it'll destroy you. Now, is God opposed to the proper relationship of sex in marriage? Is God opposed to people enjoying the rewards of husband and wife? The records of the Scripture are going to be abundant that God has designed that kind of pleasure and that kind of joy, not just for procreation, but for joy within the framework of marriage. Read the rest of this. Verse 15. He's telling him, stay away from the strange woman. What should you do? Drink water out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Should thy springs be dispersed abroad, and streams of water in the street? Let them be for thyself alone, and not for strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of thy youth. I love this part. As a loving hind and a pleasant doe, let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. For why shouldest thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of man are... we can stop there. God is saying nothing wrong with the sexual appetite or the gratification of it in the proper frame. As a matter of fact, He is telling them that a marriage union ought to continue to bring joy to each other. 1 Corinthians 7, remember that? Where Paul warned about husbands and wives not being apart from each other, lest they be tempted, and that the wife's body belongs to the husband, and the husband's body belongs to the wife. And I love the expression that God chose, be thou always ravished with her. A matter of great joy in your mate. A great gratification in this relationship. But stay away from the strange woman. You see what the Lord's doing? He's giving that kind of counsel. Read on. Drop down to chapter 6. Wonder why he spent so much time talking about sexual dangers for young people. Are you too old to remember why? All right. Drop down to chapter 6. Look at verses 24 and following. To keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of a foreigner's tongue, lust not after her beauty in thy heart, neither let her take thee with one of her eyelids. For on account of a harlot, a man is brought to a piece of bread. And the adulteress honeth for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is he that goeth to his neighbor's wife. Whosoever toucheth her shall not go unpunished. Men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he's hungry. But if he's found out, he'll restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. He that committeth adultery with a woman is void of understanding. He that doeth it would destroy his own soul. What's God doing? Saying, this is devastating. It'll ruin you. Drop down to chapter 7. And if the young man has not already gotten the advice, chapter 7, the whole chapter, is a description of a young man being taken by a prostitute. My son, keep my words. Lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. Bind them on your finger. Say to wisdom, you're my sister, and call understanding thy kinsman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman. Now he's going to describe it. Verse 6. Now this is a picture of wisdom in the form of an observer. At the window of my house, I looked forth through my lattice, and I beheld among the simple ones, the naive ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding. He just doesn't have the experience now. He's passing through the street near her corner. Okay. And he went the way to her house. In the twilight, in the evening of the day, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and a wily heart. She is clamorous and willful. Her feet abide not in her house. Now she's in the street. Now she's in the broad places and lieth at wait at every corner. So she caught him and she kissed him. And with an impudent face, she said to him, oh, listen to this line. Sacrifices of peace offerings are with me. This day have I paid my vows. Where does she tell him she's just been? He said, I just came from the temple. I just came from church. I've just paid my I've just made my sacrifices to God. Oh boy. Here's a wonderful woman, see. Read on. Verse 15. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face. And I was looking for somebody. I was lonely. And I was looking for somebody. Verse 16. I have spread my couch with carpets of tapestry, with striped cloth of the yarn of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with love. I'm inviting you to come to my house. I've got everything prepared, all beautifully fixed. I want you to come home with me. Verse 19, get this one. For the man is not home. He's gone on a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him. He'll not come home. He will come home at the full of the moon. What's the significance of her statement? He's taken a bag of money with him. What do you think that meant? Yeah, he's going to be gone a long time. He doesn't have just a pocket full of change and he's gone to the 7-Eleven. This guy has got a pouch of money, and he's on his way out of town. He's going to be gone till the new moon. He's going to be gone for a long period of time. He's going to be staying at the Holiday Inn somewhere. And I'm all alone. And I was lonely. So I came out looking for somebody, and I found you. And I want you to go home with me. And there we will share our love through the day and the night. Verse 21. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him along. He goeth afterward, goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the correction of the fool, till an arrow strike through his liver. As a bird hasteneth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his own life. What's he just described? This man is snared by the prostitute. She tells him, I'm a good woman. I've just gone to worship. My husband is away, and I'm lonely. Come home with me. And the point the writer is making is, he doesn't realize that it's for his life, and that it will be like an arrow striking through his liver. Have you ever sat with somebody who has made a mess of his life and heard words like these? I knew I ought not do it. Or words like these. If I could just go back and start over. Or often you hear this one. If I had known what it was going to do to him. Now, why do you think God has given us the wisdom literature? So we can know if we'll listen. Now, is this the only source? No. Wisdom shouts from the street corners, from the highest places. All of us have heard good advice, hopefully. When we fail to follow good advice, it's not doing something immorally like this young man trapped with the prostitute. I told you when we started this class that one of my regrets in trying to teach it is I see so many things where I have to look in the mirror of life myself and say, yeah, are you doing that kind of thing? I mean, common everyday thing. Take good care of yourself. Eat the right foods. Get some exercise. I don't. Do you? Janelle and I were driving back to our house. I think it was yesterday. It may have been the day before. We stopped at a corner. And the lady, she may have been as old as I am. But her walk was not good. And she had a black cane with her. But she was out walking. know why? We all know why. But do we do it? Do we do the little things that are wise? Hopefully, we do a lot of them. And hopefully, we avoid the ones of immorality, like the young man going with the gang because they could rob and plunder and everybody get money. Or the young man going with the prostitute. All right. Yes, sir. Really, that could be. It could be that she was covered because she had made a sacrifice. And there are people who feel the liberty to do immoral things, feeling like I can go to the priest and make the confession or something like that. That may be a possibility on that passage. To me, it's more of her deception to the guy. And the reason I tie onto that is because of the other things she says, like he's taken a bag of money and he's going to be gone for a long period of time, that she's trying to make him think that she's something she's not. All right. Lord willing, on Wednesday night, we're going to touch on some other illustrations that are here in the book of Proverbs about wisdom and folly. And then wind up these 9 chapters. Lord willing, my wife and I are going to be away next Sunday, and Steve is going to do again what he did before, and that is talk about some of the Proverbs. Thank you for listening so kindly. I hope this is of value to you. Thank you.